Good afternoon. Have you ever spent hours late into the night working, trying to solve a really difficult geometry corruption problem? Have you ever spent an entire week trying to optimize a single shader to get back a half a millisecond of performance so that you could hit frame rate in your game? Of course you have. So you know that graphics tools are critical to your ability to make great games and great multimedia applications. My name is Jason Strayer. I'm the program manager lead for graphics tools at Microsoft. I got my start in programming way back in fifth grade. I convinced my parents to buy me an Apple IIe so that I could learn 6502 assembly language. Of course, the real reason I got them to buy me that computer was so I could play Ultima 2. Which is partly why I love optimization so much, because optimizing games is a lot like playing an adventure game. There are a number of really difficult challenges that you have to solve with creative solutions, and all the while, the clock is ticking. By the end of this talk, you will have a broad overview of the primary performance and debugging tools for graphics that Microsoft offers for the full breadth of Windows devices. Armed with this knowledge, you will be able to go back, dig in on these tools, use these features in order to solve really tough problems in your game, impress your friends and family and your boss, get that promotion that you've deserved for over 2 years, make millions of dollars, and buy your own game studio. All because you had the gumption to stick around at 5:30 on a Thursday afternoon at GDC. So let's go ahead and get started. There are a number of great graphics tools out there. I recognize some of my colleagues at other companies out in the audience. Everyone makes great graphics tools. For the span of time that we have, I'm going to focus primarily on DirectX tools, and very specifically on tools for DirectX 11 and DirectX 12. Hopefully everyone in the audience is aware that DirectX is the API you use to put cutting-edge graphics and visuals into your game for Windows. DirectX 11 has powered a large number of awesome games shipping on current versions of Windows, and I'm very proud to announce, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of the press, that we will be shipping DirectX 12 with Windows 10 very soon. Quick history lesson, since a number of you have been in the industry for a while, you may have heard about a number of the tools that are already out there. A number of years ago, as we were shipping the Xbox 360 console, we shipped a tool called Pix for Xbox 360. We believe this tool hit a high water mark in terms of graphics profiling and debugging apps. We're very proud of it. It brought together a unified CPU, GPU, and system profiling tool that is very useful for games that target the Xbox hardware. Internally, we've used this as something of a gold standard as we've built features in our other tools trying to get to the same point as Pix for Xbox 360. Around the same time, we released a tool for Windows called Pix for Windows. Pix for Windows was inspired by Pix for Xbox 360 and shipped in the DirectX SDK. It primarily focused on debugging, though, and did not have as much of the profiling functionality that Pix for Xbox 360 did. Back in the Windows 8 timeframe, a few number of us who worked on the Pix for Windows team were trying to decide what to do not only with Pix for Windows, but the DirectX SDK. It was becoming obvious that the DirectX SDK needed a new home, the Windows SDK. Because a number of developers were using both, and it made sense to unify these two to have a better experience for developers. And as we were looking at Pix for Windows, the primary tool in the DirectX SDK, we had a real decision to make. So we sat down with our partners in the Visual Studio team, who at the time were getting interested in providing a much enhanced graphics experience for developers in Visual Studio. And thus, Visual Studio Graphics Diagnostics was born, shipping for the first time in Visual Studio 2012. This brought a lot of the great functionality of Pix with an entirely new user interface that had a great new look and feel and revitalized this old tool. At the same time, a number of other things began shipping in Visual Studio that were intended for graphics and gaming developers. I'm not going to cover these. We've talked about these in the past. But briefly, we had a set of project tools, things like a starter kit, as well as content tools, a model editor. We even added HLSL project file support to the project system. And we added performance and debugging tools, a graphics debugger. And then over time, we added profiling support. This is where we're going to spend our time talking today. In addition, in Visual Studio 2012, we also unveiled an entirely new way of shipping software to customers. Visual Studio team began shipping frequent updates quarterly that released not only updates, servicing, and patches to bugs, but also new functionality so that Visual Studio got better over the entire year. And this was very exciting to us from a tooling standpoint because we were able to ship new graphics tooling features continuously throughout the year rather than forcing developers to wait to get all of the goodness we've been working on. And we're going to continue taking advantage of this model in the future. And I'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the presentation. So that brings us to two primary tools that we're providing for developers today. Pix for Xbox One, which is largely inspired by Pix for Xbox 360. We've enhanced it. We've added a plethora of new CPU tools to it as well. And it stands, just as Pix for Xbox 360 did, as a unified CPU, GPU, and system profiling tool. This tool is available to XDK developers. It is designed for the Xbox hardware. It takes advantage of a number of features of the fixed Xbox hardware in order to allow developers to tailor their app at a very deep level and micro-optimize around the Xbox GPU, as well as the CPU. We also offer Visual Studio Graphics Diagnostics, now shipping in Visual Studio 2015, which targets the full breadth of Windows devices, from Xbox to phone to PC desktop, and a number of other great devices that you've heard us announce recently and will be announcing in the future. And this tool is focused on providing a common set of functionality across all of this hardware. And this brings us up to what we'd like to talk about today. We have a number of great announcements to make around Visual Studio 2015. And to kick things off, I'd like to invite Rong Liu, my colleague from Visual Studio, to the stage to demonstrate Direct3D 11 features in Visual Studio.
Thanks, Jason. Hi, my name is Rong Liu, and I am a PM on the Visual Studio team. I've been on the VS team for over 8 years now. I've been working on different features in VS. In the past 3 years, I've been focusing on the graphics tools. It's always magic to me what game developers create in those games. So I get this opportunity to learn about what you guys do, and I'm really fortunate to be part of it to provide those tools that you guys can use to make your games even better. So today, we are going to spend some time to show you a few demos here. Like Jason mentioned, I'm going to be focusing on the Visual Studio tools we have today for debugging and profiling DirectX 11 apps. So I am going to do two demos today. The first demo, we're going to be focusing on trying to use our tools to fix a rendering issue in our apps. The second demo, we'll be moving on to a performance problem in our app. We'll be using a different tool in VS to try to solve that problem. So with that, I'm going to move over to the demo station and switch over to our demo machines. So what I have here is Visual Studio 2015, and I have a DirectX 11 app open here. Let me run this real quick. So as we see here, we have a 3D city simulated here. It renders 60 by 60 blocks and 6,000 ring drops coming down from the sky during each frame. And as you have noticed, there are some buildings being black. Apparently, some textures are not being rendered correctly. So we're going to go back to VS. And this time, we are going to launch the app with the graphics diagnostics tool attached. To do that, I'm going to the debug menu, going to graphics, and move over to start diagnostics. Let me zoom this a little bit. It's over here. We also have a shortcut key that is Alt F5 that you can use to launch the same tool. So again, we have the app running. This time we have these texts here, which indicated that we have attached the graphics debugger to the app. Let me switch back to VS. So over here in Visual Studio, we have two graphs showing your real-time frame time and frame rate. So you can watch that as your app is going. Down here, we have a huge button that says capture frame. This is where you can capture frames from your game. So let me do that. Let me switch back so we get one frame rendered. So I just capture frame from within Visual Studio. The other way you can capture frames is from within your app. So the shortcut key for that is print screen key on your keyboard. So I just do that. So now we have two frames captured. At this point, I'm going to stop the app. So this is not just screenshots, of course. So now I'm going to open a frame, and we're going to look at what happened during that frame, why we didn't get those textures rendered correctly. So here we have this frame opened in Visual Studio Graphics Analyzer. The title is here. This is a separate window that is separate from your main Visual Studio IDE. So we did build this using the Visual Studio Shell, so you can still do the same customizations you can do with Visual Studio IDE, like adjust your fonts and your environment, different themes. But the good thing about this is this IDE only has the graphics components, which means it's small, it has very low memory usage as well, and doesn't mess up your main Visual Studio IDE. So you're going to look at your frame inside this window. Let's start from the left. From here, we're going to be looking at our events. What events occur during that frame? We log every single DirectX API calls that occurred during that frame. So now we can walk through that list. And as I click on different events, you will be able to see which objects were drawn by that event. So this first draw event drew those buildings. If I move on, we'll see more buildings were drawn. Apparently, these buildings are being black. So by navigating through the event list, we know this draw event is the one we want to investigate. So let's do that. Now we know which draw event. I can then actually click on the scene to select a pixel, because we know where the black buildings are. So we can collect anywhere in those buildings. And on the right side, we actually have a history of that pixel. So this shows you all the events that drew something to that pixel. And not only that, but also we collect the information about which triangles this pixel is part of and what shader code will run for that pixel. So you can actually see that inside this window. Not do that. Too big. All right, so we can see the triangle here, and these are the shaders here. You can click on those links to look at the shader code, or you can start debugging those shader code right here. So now I have the shader debugger launched. We have a side-by-side window, which is on the left side is your shader source code. On the right side is our HLSL shader compiler output, so we can compare the results. In here, it's a regular debugger. It's just like a regular debugger. You can look at those variables. You can step over your code. You can put breakpoints. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go do F10 to step over into the code. Oh, we just see that. I am entering this if statement. This is where I am setting the color for that pixel, which means my texture should have loaded at this point. Now, Looks like my color does not have anything yet. Of course, I haven't assigned anything. But as I move over to hover over to this texture, which is color map 4 in this case, this is supposed to be a texture I'm loading at this point. Apparently, I'm not seeing anything here. It doesn't have a value. Whereas if I hover over other textures, like code map 1, it actually has this magnify here, which I click on, and I can get to see the texture that's being loaded. And at this point, we can pretty much make a guess that I only have one texture loaded, and three other textures are not being assigned value. That's just my guess at this point. So now I have a theory what the problem might be. Usually what we will do is, at this point, is we're going to go back to our source code, my project, make a change to my shader code, rerun my app, and see if that fixed the problem. And nothing wrong with that, but it's pretty long iteration, especially with games, right? So you need to rebuild everything, and you need to get to the point when this bug repurls, which could be a long iteration process. We want to really make that a faster iteration process. So that's how we implemented this, what we call shader edit and apply feature. The idea is right here, inside this analyzer, you can make changes to your shader code, and you can apply the changes right away so that you can see what the changes will do to the scene. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to just do this quick experiment. So because we know color map 1 was loaded correctly, right? So what if I use the same texture for all the buildings? And theoretically, all the buildings should at least have a texture. It's not the right texture I want, but it should not be black anymore. That's my theory. Let's see if that's correct. Let me move this over to the right side, and you can see it. Now I'm going to apply the change. We just refreshed. It happened too quickly. We just refreshed the frame. You can see that what was being black, now it has a texture, and it was the texture, the color map 1 that we saw before. So now at this point, we know where the problem is. Now we're going to go back to the real code to make the right fix, which is to load the other three textures that we really want to load. The quickest way to go back to your code is probably by going through the call stacks. As you were capturing frame, we actually collect call stacks for these events as well. So I am currently selecting this event, which is the draw event that has issues. What I'm really want to get in at is the API call I made to set those shader resources, right? That's the API call I need to fix. And we can find that call pretty easily by going through this tree view here. So by expanding this draw event, I can then look at different objects and states that are related to that draw event, like buffers, input layout, et cetera. One of the things we can look at is shader resources, which currently only has one texture associated, which also verified my theory. But the other good part of looking at this is now I find this event, which actually set shader resources. And now I can go back to my source code by clicking on that call stack, which takes us right back into my main Visual Studio IDE. So remember, we have main VS IDE and the separate analyzer. And we still have that connection between those two IDEs, so we can quickly go back to our source code. Here's where I set my shader source resource, and then quickly realized I made a typo here. Instead of one texture, I should have loaded 4. Now let's run this again and see if this actually fixed the problem. Here's our app again. Now we got beautiful textures. By using our Visual Studio Graphics Analyzer feature, we were able to identify where the problem is, and we fixed it. One more thing to notice on here is I have this frame rate showing here, which is running at like 50 frames per second, which is not at the 60 I would like to have. We're going to save that for the next demo. We're going to come back and All right, just to quickly recap what we showed in the first demo. We used the Visual Studio graphics diagnostics tool, which you can use to capture and playback any of the desktop, Windows Store, and the Windows Phone apps, either on your local machine, on remote machines, or devices. In real time, in Visual Studio, you can watch your frame time and the frame rate as your app is running. After you capture a couple of frames, you can then open each frame in Visual Studio Graphics Analyzer, IDE, to inspect all these various aspects of your frame, including events, objects. I didn't get to show you everything, but you can definitely do shader debugging, pipeline stages, and call stacks, and all those informations you can get from there. The other feature I want to highlight, which I showed you in the first demo, is shader edit and apply. We have this side-by-side window for source code and compiler output. And you can modify your shader code in place and view the changes right away, how it affects your scene. It's really about giving you a playground where you can try out different experiments with your shader code and see the results right away. Now let's move on to the second demo. As I mentioned, the second demo is going to be focusing on solving a performance problem. We have already seen that this app is running at 50 frames per second. What I would like to have is 60 frames. Usually on PC or consoles, you would like 60, and small devices, you might be targeting 30, but whatever your target is, there will be times when your frame rate is just not there. We are gonna use the GPU usage tool in Visual Studio to try to fix this problem here. Okay, we are back in the same app. Now, we already know there's a performance issue. So what I'm gonna do is I'm going to launch this app with the GPU usage tool. So I go to debug menu and go to start diagnostics tool. We don't need debugging, so I pick the without debugging option. Here we have a list of tools that are available for this project. The new tool we have added is called GPU usage. The good part of being a part of VS toolset is that we can run the tool along with other existing tools that you might be interested in. So we have the CPU usage tool, which is the CPU profiler Visual Studio already has. We can run both tools together in the same session and collect the data from both sides. So here's the app running. And in Visual Studio, let me just stop the collection here. And I'll show you what data we have collected. So the reason I'm running both CPU and GPU usage at the same time is really about because graphics apps, when you have a performance issue, it's really hard to say which side the bottleneck is. It could be CPU or the GPU, because it's not only about how many polygons you can render on the GPU side. It's also about how much work you put on the CPU and really need to balance how those two work together and both are fully utilized. All right, so we have the report here. First of all, we still have those graphs that you probably saw in the when I was running the app. You can watch those in real time. So we have the frame time, frame rate still. But there are two new swim lanes we're showing here that come in with these usage tools. The first one is the GPU utilization that tells you how busy your GPU is, and also CPU utilization as well. From this overview in the report, it's really hard to say where my bottleneck is, because neither my CPU or GPU is fully utilized. We don't really know what the problem is. In order to investigate this, I am going to take a look at the next level of details. So I'm going to select a range in this timeline. It could be anywhere in the timeline. And then I'm going to hit the view details link, which gives a more detailed GPU usage view. Let's take a look at the table down here. It's a huge table for all the DirectX events occurred on the GPU for the range you selected. We collect every single event along with their timestamps on the CPU and the GPU when the work started, and how long it took for the GPU to render. So we collect all that data from graphics driver. All right, so after we get that, based on the data, we create a graph on the top, which is a visual representation of the same data. So we break down into different CPU cores. I have 8 cores on my machine. And down here, we also have different GPU engines. I'm using NVIDIA card here. So this is my rendering engine. This is my copy engine. For my app, I'm also still only using the rendering engine. So all these blocks here, the green color represent the process I'm profiling, which is here. We do use different colors to represent different processes on your system. The reason we collect from other processes, because those can be using resources on your machine, and that could affect the performance of your app. So you can actually see there are multiple things happening. There are different colors, processes using different resources. For our for the one that we are interested in, which is green, you can see that most of the work is being done by CPU 0 core. And sometimes other cores are being used. But we can tell that only one core is being used at any given time. Like I have 8 cores, but only one core is being used. Apparently, there might be an opportunity for me to offload some work to the other cores. Then on the other hand, if we look at the GPU usage, my GPU is idling for most of the time. It's not taking up all the time it has to render each frame. All these vertical lines represent VSync on your monitor, which usually is set to 60 hertz. So between each line, it's representing 16 milliseconds. For your game to hit 60 frames per second, you would have to have all the CPU work done, all GPU work done within those two lines. So we can tell GPU is doing a pretty good job rendering for the frame, which is this entire block, within those two lines. So we don't have an issue on the GPU side, but we do on the CPU side. And the reason the GPU is idling for most of the time is because it's actually waiting for the CPU to finish the work before it can start rendering. So at this point, from this report, we can tell we do have a CPU-bound issue instead of a GPU issue. So what do we do at this point? There are many ways to solve performance problems. But we are going to go back and look at the CPU usage report. Remember, we ran both at the same time in the same session. So we also collected those data. In here, this gives us a report for every single function and how much CPU resources it was used by that function. So we can see the data here. This external code that's taking 99%. I can keep drilling into this tree. Oh, surprising. So in the render loop, the function call that renders the ring actually takes up 60% of my CPU time. On the other hand, City is taking less than 1%. That's pretty surprising. Let's see what's going on here. Let's go to this function, and then I can say view source, which will take us right back inside Visual Studio at the function that we were looking for. So this function is pretty straightforward. Essentially, we are building an instance list for every single ring job that we need, which, as I mentioned, we render 6,000 ring jobs in each frame. So what we have here is a for loop that iterates for 6,000 times. And all the work is happening on one core. It's definitely taking a lot longer than we could have done, which is offload the work to multiple cores. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to comment out those code. I'm going to uncomment that. And it's essentially the same thing we're doing. The only difference is I replaced the for loop with a parallel for, which is a function that we ship in Visual Studio called a parallel library that will automatically offload the work to multiple CPU cores. And the rest of it, it's pretty much the same loop. Now let's rerun this app again. Almost at 60, pretty stable. And it may not be so obvious that by jumping from 50 to 60, but what I want to show you is if we were going to do this analyze again by running the both two tools at the same time, here's what the graph will look like. So I captured this earlier to save some time. Here's what the graph looks like after we made that change. Looking at all these CPU cores, they're all doing their job. And then looking at our GPU usage, we have almost, between almost every two lines, we have 8%. That means we are pretty close to 60 frames per second. All right, so that's the second demo I want to show you. Quickly recap again. So we have seen the GPU usage tool in Visual Studio, which you can watch the frame time, frame rate, and utilizations of GPU in real time as your app is running. While that happens, we also collect data from your graphics driver so that we can give you a detailed report afterwards. You can use this report to look at your CPU usage, GPU usage, what exactly occurred. And hopefully that's helpful to determine whether your CPU or GPU is the bottleneck in your game. All right, I've been showing you demos features that you can use to debug and profile your DirectX 11 apps. I'm gonna hand over to my colleague, Rudy, and he's gonna show you DirectX 12 tools that we're building.
Thank you, Rong. Hello, everybody. I think I'm going to throw down the gauntlet with Jason. I'm Rudolf Balazs. I believe the first game I wrote was back on a Honeywell mini computer. It had 2K of core memory, magnetic core memory. It was all in punch cards, and I did in Hollerith code. So that was the first one. I think I beat you there, buddy. I didn't get into it big time until after high school when I did some educational software games. And then when I came to Microsoft, one of the hiring managers said, I'll give you an interview if you go get to level 14 in Asheron's call. And so I've spent many years of my life doing that sort of thing. Anyway, with that, let's talk about D3D12. You may wonder why Rong was showing you all the D3D11 tools. One of the things we wanted to emphasize by showing you D3D11 first in Visual Studio is that we've gone through and we've made sure we're sharing the infrastructure in our tooling between D3D11 and D3D12. In this way, anything you've seen Rong do in D3D11, you'll be able to do in D3D12. Really, the only differences are going to be the data structures, the API calls, and so on. And so while she focused on 11, I'm going to focus on 12. Now, I'll start talking a little bit about D3D12. I'm sure you've gone to some of the other sessions. D3D12 is probably more direct to the hardware than the previous version of Direct3D. And then that happens because the hardware has evolved and become more similar, and we can use more similar features and reduce some of the overhead we were doing in the runtime and the drivers. But we've also pushed a lot of the control of managing resources to the developers. And this sort of control is great because you, in the application, in the game, have a clear understanding of when you need that texture or when you need, you know, something on the GPU for the work to actually happen. But it also exposes the very clear concurrency between the CPU and the GPU. And because of that, we wanted to make sure we'd have great tools available day one. So it doesn't matter how you actually approach your first direct 3D12 project. If you're going to be using one of the existing commercial engines, I'm going to show you some tools that probably will still be helpful to you, and you can use them as well. If you're porting an existing game, I think you'll find many of the tools that we'll show are going to be helpful for you because your algorithms are already correct. Now you're just going in and looking, did I get the data actually in the right places? And we provide tools that let you find that. Or if you're building a brand new engine, again, the tools we're going to show you help with that. Now, I've listed some of the problems at the bottom of this page that we typically have in graphics programs. And D3D 12 does not make those magically go away. We personally can still make these sort of mistakes. And so we wanted to make sure that the day one when we ship D3D 12, we have great tools. So with that, I'm going to start off by showing you a little command line tool. As I mentioned earlier, we did a whole bunch of work on the infrastructure of our tooling. The reason there's two of us presenting is because Rong works on Visual Studio, and I work in the graphics group in Windows. And so I'm primarily responsible for the actual infrastructure pieces. And what we've done with these tools is that these infrastructure pieces now ship as an optional component of the OS. So if you have, you know, Windows 10, you can go into optional components and say install, you know, graphics tools, and you can get this tool. So with that, let me switch over to demos. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to show you here is this is an old Xbox sample. We've ported it to Direct 3D 12. And the reason it's great to start with an Xbox sample is because we can show that we are bringing some console-like efficiencies to the PC with Direct 3D 12. It's doing ray tracing. Most of the magic is in the shader. The actual code itself is fairly straightforward. The next piece I'm going to show you is I've installed the optional features of the tools for Windows 10 on this system. And I'm going to run that DXCAP and actually capture every API call this application makes. And then I'll play it back. Imagine the scenario where you have an artist and he's physically separated from a developer somewhere. Like maybe you're in different countries or across the street or even in a different building. By taking an API capture of some graphical problem, I can simply send that log over, the developer can play it back, and voila, it all works. So let's see this run. So I'm running the application now. The logs are being captured and it's being stored on disk. I'm just going to do a couple of seconds of that. And there it is being played back. Just had to do dxcap-p. If you've been down to the expo and come by my booth, which is the Direct 3D 12 tools, you may have seen some of the larger captures I've done. I've taken some of the larger D3D 12 engines and samples that people have been building, and I've captured close to 100 gigabytes of streaming capture that we're playing back at high fidelity. And because the game is actually not involved here, I can do that on any piece of hardware that I want. I can just move the log to a different piece of hardware. I can see, okay, is this problem specific to this configuration that I'm working on, or is it something else that's actually my fault? And it's a great debugging aid in that sense. Now, the other thing this tool lets you do is, okay, I took a stream capture, and I could take a really, really, really long stream capture if I really want and play it back, but they get big. And you don't really want to analyze that in Visual Studio because if you have a really long capture, it's going to take you a really long time to analyze it. So one of the things you can do is use this DXCAP tool, like on an artist machine, for example. You can script it. It's fully scriptable, but has all sorts of options. And capture a single frame that's bad and send that single frame back and then open it in Visual Studio 2015 and look and see and analyze the problem. So I'll show you how that happens. Here's an example of DXCAP where I'm capturing just the 10th frame, and then I play it back 10 times in a row so that I can show you that it actually captured. I can actually even capture a bitmap of that file. I can capture all sorts of other things, and then I can compare them. In fact, this tool is very useful in the porting exercise when you're taking one engine to another engine because your algorithms are correct. Your rendering is already correct. But as you're changing the infrastructure of your code to use the new system, new APIs, we make typos, we make mistakes, and all of a sudden something may not work. Well, you can take a trace of the previous version of the code that used to work, take a trace of the version that you broke, dump those traces as XML and just do a diff on them and see exactly where it was. And the folks doing the D3D12 or Direct3D12 port for Unreal did exactly that. They had a case where some of the shadows weren't showing up exactly right, and they simply took a trace before and after, did a diff, and they quickly found out it was one of the constant buffers wasn't being initialized and it was all zero. All right. Now, the next demo I'm going to show you, I'm going to quickly go through these demos and then I'll come back and do a recap. Close. Okay. So I'm going to open yet another sample program from the Xbox era, or Xbox SDK. And this is, this is a sample that's fairly simple. I took a capture of it earlier today, and I'm just going to open the frame. Rong has already showed you how to do all this, so I'm just going to open it. The reason this sample was interesting to me is because it has so many calls in it. There we go. Now, this is Direct3D12. We have everything is done by a command list. And you look at this and say, oh, well, that's a fairly simple program. It only has three command lists. Well, if I actually expand the second command list, we have a bunch of bundles, which also have draw calls in them. And this goes on for pages and pages and pages in a single command list. In fact, if I come somewhere around here, you'll see that it's just taking this city image and it's, you know, stamping it out one after the other. About the only thing changing is the color of the pixel shader is changing the color of the city that's being drawn, and the position of the city and where it's actually being put down on the surface actually is being changed. So I can go through to the next one and I can actually see them being drawn. Now, I can do the same sort of thing Rong did earlier, where I can expand the bundle. There's my draw instance call. And I can even expand that further and get the same sort of information. Again, you'll see this. The UI is very familiar. It's the same thing we have for Direct3D11. But the content now is very specific to Direct3D12. I have things like the pipeline stage object, which gets set in this bundle, and everything that has been set, I can actually go through and investigate and look at. Right now, this UI is showing this as text. Eventually, we're going to have a lot of hyperlinks, as you see at the top of this, where you can actually go from one object to the next. Like if I want to see the root signature that was associated with this jar call, I can click on that. And in this case, there's, you know, basically three things set in the root signature. There's a descriptor table for the SRB, a descriptor table for the shader, and a sampler, and the constant buffer. Now, okay, so I've shown you that. There's a few other things I can go to, like, for example, here's the constant buffers, and I can actually go look at those resources, and I can view them and see exactly what values are in the constant buffers. So the way this application works, and the way you're going to do this application in Direct3D, is because you have control of the concurrency, is you're going to allocate a large heap where you're going to put all these constant buffers. And you're going to fill that in ahead of time, because you're going to be writing, you're going to have the GPU reading from each one of those while you're executing along. And so you need a fair number of them to make sure you keep the GPU busy and not stall it while you're waiting for the CPU to update that constant buffer in the future. So what I'm going to do right now is close this one, because I'm going to show you a slightly different application. So close that, close this solution. So Rong showed an example of debugging an application, and I'm going to run this. And you'll see that really this image should have been filled all the way. The city should have been spread all over the screen, but it's not. There's only some of the cities being drawn here. So what I'm going to do is try and figure out exactly what is happening. Again, I took a capture earlier for the sake of saving some time. And we're going to open that frame. And again, we'll look at the executes. So there's the first one being drawn. First city gets drawn. The second city gets drawn. Third city gets drawn. And as I go down here, eventually I stop seeing new cities being drawn. So something's gone wrong. And more than likely, I've either gotten the constant buffers incorrect, I've forgotten to update the position, or something like that has happened. So we're going to just expand one of these and take a look. So as you remember on the previous example, I expanded the state information. Let's take a look at the constant buffers that are in use. Go to object 23. And it looks like the information is actually there. So it's probably not the fact that I'm failing to initialize a constant buffer. But if you remember what was in our root signature, there's actually a descriptor for that heap of constant buffers that is being referenced. And this actually gets set for every one of these bundles to a different value. So let's take a look at the heap. So I'm going to open the object table, sort this. And I'm going to search through this quickly for, there you go, constant buffer heap. Let's take a look. And aha, as you remember I said, this application is supposed to write a whole bunch of constant buffers out. Well, it looks like in this case it's only drawn or filled out four of them, and it's left all the others in the table empty. So I wonder why that is. So let's do the same thing Rong did. We'll go back to our execute bundle. And I'm going to use the call stack to take me back to the code. And I see here I have a loop that basically draws, you know, it's setting the value in the constant buffer for that particular bundle, and then it's calling the execute bundle. And we do that four times. And then there's a loop, which clearly I have forgotten to increment that loop. So let's see if that was the problem. It's nice when people comment their bugs in the code, isn't it? Makes it very, and it fills out the rest of the application. Okay. So the key thing is that we want to be able to look at all these data structures and make sure that we're doing all the right things, and that's available to you. Now, I've shown you this application. The other example I want to show you is actually very similar to the one Rong showed earlier. We took the city demo that was Direct3D 11, and we moved it to Direct3D 12, added a few enhancements to it, of course. We couldn't not enhance it. And again, it's doing not too bad. You know, it looks okay. But let's actually take a look at the traces that we've taken with the same sort of performance traces. Actually, there's a little story behind this performance trace. As I said, we share our infrastructure, and so many of the things that work in Direct3D 11 will also work in Direct3D 12 once we implement the 12 version of that. So for this sample, we had the runtime team on Direct3D working in parallel, implementing the instrumentation for collecting data, performance data. We had the kernel guys working in parallel, instrumenting the kernel to collect the performance data. Our tools dev was working on building the module that actually analyzes that information and outputs it. And then the driver vendors, the NVIDIA folks, were implementing it also in the driver, so that we had all four of those people working in parallel at the same time. And then all of a sudden, one day, it all came together. And so my developer says to me, what should I do next? I said, well, do you want to make the one-line code change in Visual Studio so that it works and I can actually see the data? And they went in, put it in, and guess what happened? Okay, let's open it up. Again. Sorry. I'll open up the trace. It's processing the ETW events. It's correlating all the data between the runtimes, the kernel, the application, and the driver. And then we get the same sort of, you know, frame view that Rong was showing you earlier for Direct3D11. And I'm going to look at a small view here, like a few seconds of data. And again, I have here the CPU chart. And the data looks actually pretty good. And this, by the way, all came together on Friday night, just before I got on a plane to come here. So it was amazing. It's like magic. Now, if I look at this data a little more closely, I'll zoom into a selection. I'm going to close this so I have some more real estate. This application is pretty much just doing a command list, present. And the command list has a whole bunch of draw operations in it that we can actually look at, and we can see exactly how long each one of these draw operations has taken, and so on. But you'll notice that I have the vertical retrace lines here and here on the monitor. And my time on the GPU for this particular application is just a little bit more than what I want. And so what's happening is I'm falling back to 30 hertz rather than 60 hertz because I'm doing too much work on the GPU in this application. Clearly, I'm not CPU bound because there's nothing going on in the CPU up top here. So the thing you'd want to do is go look at this, figure out what you want to change, and you do the exact same operations that Rong showed you for Direct3D11. You know, find those sort of problems and fix them. The other thing I want to point out in this particular example is, let's say I pick a particular draw call. So the green bar is really a command list, and I can actually look at the individual draw calls in that command list. I can also see where that draw call was issued back on the CPU thread. And as you can see, I actually have some pretty bad latency here because I'm missing that frame. The app is double buffering. And so, you know, if this was a game, it would feel really laggy for me. So I'd want to fix, you know, the rendering problems and also look at that double buffering. Okay. All right, so with that, I'll go back to here. So in a recap, I showed you the DXCap tool. It's a scriptable command line tool. It's part of the tools that are optional, the graphics tools that are an optional feature of Windows 10 that you can download. You actually go to System Settings, Optional Features, select it, and it will pull down DXCap. It will pull down the Direct3D debug runtimes. It'll pull down a bunch of infrastructure pieces so you can debug your graphics applications. And that you can use for, you know, all sorts of things because it's lightweight, it's very small. You can produce captures that you can open Visual Studio. It has a very small disk footprint, and so on. The second example I showed you was a city where I did a frame capture in Visual Studio 2015. Again, this is all under development currently, but all the features you saw for Direct3D 11 are there for Direct3D 12. And in fact, if a UI works for Direct3D 12 and it works for Direct3D 11, we can enable those UIs in both places because we have this shared infrastructure. So we have the event list, we have texture viewers, all this sort of stuff works. And if you want to come down to the booth later, like tomorrow I'll be on booth duty in the morning, I'll be happy to show you more of these features in there. And then lastly, I showed you the GPU usage tool. This tool is coming in fairly late, so I'm probably not going to have it in the RTM version of Visual Studio 2015, but it's looking really good at this point, and who knows, maybe it'll make it if everything works fine. And again, it's similar to the Direct3D 11 user interface. It's integrated with the Perf HUD, the Visual Studio Performance HUD, so you can do the same sort of CPU concurrent collection that Rong showed earlier, and you can use it to find bottlenecks and synchronization issues. So with that, I will hand it back to Jason.
Thanks, Rudy. So thank you very much for your rapt attention for the full hour. I really appreciate all of you staying behind on a late afternoon. We wanted to close things out by talking a little bit about where we're going from here. As Rudy said, a lot of this is coming together right now. We have engineers back in Redmond working very hard to get all of these features working. And I'm incredibly excited to see the progress that the team has made. And I'm also incredibly excited to tell you that when we ship Direct3D 12 and we have it publicly available for you to begin developing with, these tools will be available in Visual Studio 2015 for you to use. So in terms of the things that we're going to work on from here on out, next is really to finish out that full feature set that we have for Direct3D 11 in Visual Studio and get that working for Direct3D 12. We're taking the strategy of enabling the current features that we have and getting those working for 12 first, but then we're going to go forward and working in partnership with you, the game developers, and our partners across the industry, as you begin to use Direct3D 12 and you stumble through and fight with some of the really tough problems that this new API brings to the fold. We'll work with you on those and start to build new functionality in the tooling to help you discover and solve these really tough problems. Some of the things that we're thinking about, obviously, Direct3D 12 takes away a lot of the training wheels when it comes to synchronization of caches or synchronization of resource usage. Obviously, we're going to need some tooling around that. We'll likely do more in the timeline, as well as have some specific tooling to help you track down things like deadlocks and potentially resource contention issues. Also, we're very interested in approaching resource history. We think that approaching the usage of a resource throughout your entire frame will also help you with some of those resource barriers and other problems that you'll need to be solving with Direct3D 12. Finally, a very high priority for us, and this is kind of to bring things full circle to the two tools I talked to you about at the beginning. We're responsible not only for Visual Studio 2015 and the DirectX tools for the full breadth of Windows devices, but we're also responsible for picks for Xbox One. And while we have these two tools where one is very much about breadth and one is very much about depth, we do believe there are common scenarios that both types of developers, both on both systems, are going to be encountering. And the way that we're going to tackle that first is to find the common core controls that were in use between both tools and begin to make those shared controls that are used in both tools. So for example, the GPU timing data feature that Rong demonstrated and Rudy showed working for Direct3D 12 actually was done in partnership with the PIX team, our combined team. And in fact, the UI that we're using in Visual Studio is the timeline control that comes from PIX. This is also a really great example of how we intend to ship features that are inspired by our console tooling on Windows and other devices. And just like Rudy said, we believe DirectX 12, a large part of that is bringing console-like efficiency to the PC. Likewise, we want to bring console-like tooling to the PC. And so, just as we do with PIX on fixed function hardware, when we come to Windows, we work with all of our partners in the industry to bring up data through the drivers and through specific interfaces and then surface that in our tools. And we did that with the timing data, and we will continue to do that with other features in the future, things like surfacing GPU instructions from shaders or potentially even GPU counters so that you have really detailed optimization features like you have in PIX, but also available on all of our devices. Another great example of something that's come together very recently We've had a very robust texture viewer in Pix. We've now integrated that. You might have seen part of that either on the show floor or moving quickly through the demos. We've moved that from Pix into Visual Studio. As part of that, we now have a histogram with independent channel selection, as well as ability to select a different type for viewing your resource. And we'll continue to share functionality between both tools in the texture viewer and a number of other controls as those surface. So we're just at the end of our time. I really wish that I could talk to you for another hour about all of the great features in our tools. But fortunately, we have a great show floor presence this year. And I encourage you, if any of this piqued your interest, please stop by, come and chat with Rong, Rudy, and I. And we'd love to give you a much more detailed demo of all of these tools, particularly Pix, since we didn't get enough time to talk about that here in this presentation today. After the show, the best place for you to go to get more information is the Visual C++ blog. It's that link right there, or if you go up to Bing and search for Visual C++ blog, you will easily be able to find this. As soon as the Windows SDK and Visual Studio 2015 are available for you to begin Direct 3D12 development, we will post information up on the blog about how to enable the optional features that Rudy mentioned and begin using these tools to solve really tough problems. And with that, I'll finish up on this slide, and I'd like to take any questions that you might have. Would you guys like to join me? Thank you. Question.
Yeah, I was wondering if you're doing D3D12 in C# with like SharpDX or something like that. Can you still integrate with these awesome perf tools?
You want to address that?
The tools I showed, the graphics debugger, it definitely works with C# project types. We have not done like extensive testing on all those types, but we have definitely done some basic testing, like SharpDX, like Mono Game, Unity, all those type of game projects. It works with C# projects.
Hey, so the call stack widget that you guys had in the DirectX diagnostics tool and performance tool, will that work correctly in the case that, say, we give our game to some third-party external QA vendor and they want to dump a capture using that and then send that back to us? Are we going to be able to get those call stacks even if we don't give those guys symbols?
Unfortunately, no. So you will be missing the actual call stacks in there. But they can still capture, they can still send you back, and you can get to the other information, but probably not the call stack.
How come the call stack intro isn't saved in that case? I thought ECW did all that.
No, we actually need symbols for those call stacks.
Yeah, in the scenario you're talking about, you're sending the capture to another studio, but right, not the symbol files. Unfortunately, at the time the capture's loaded, it has to do the symbol file lookup then. We're not storing the symbols into the capture.
Oh, okay, but right. In order to generate the call stack capture, you don't need symbols. You only need symbols when you're, I guess, going through and resolving those addresses into the names. Okay, so that does work. Okay, cool.
All right. I have two questions regarding DXCap. First, is it only DX12 or compatible with previous DX versions?
It's shared infrastructure. It works with Direct 3D11 as well as Direct 3D12.
Awesome. And the second one is, what's the performance of DXCap when you have a replay? Could you use it for performance testing, or would you only use it for debugging purpose?
There is some bit of overhead by doing the capture as well. Like the performance tool that I was showing in the second half is based on ETW, so it's a very lightweight. API capture tends to be a little bit heavier weight. But that doesn't mean you can't use it for performance tuning. Like if you're taking the capture on a really high-end PC and you're doing it like on an SSD where you can write the log really quickly, there's a lot of extra capacity. And then you can take that same log and run it over and over again many times. You can try different things with it on different hardware and see what sort of impact it has. So there are various performance things. And we do have in our backlog some performance work that we're going to add to DXCAP that would be great for like regression testing and analyzing performance with it.
OK, thanks.
Hey, a question about DXCAP, actually two of them. One, does it work for remote debugging targets?
You have to run it on the system.
You have to run it on the system.
Yes.
OK. Similarly, like my artists don't run Visual Studio, don't have a full install. Is there a way to get it minimally installed? Is there a way to?
Yeah, so the question is there a way of minimally installing DXCAP? And that's the whole point of shipping those infrastructure pieces with the OS as an optional feature.
I see.
Right. Those binaries, it's about 10 megabytes, is actually hosted on the cloud. And so when you go install the optional feature, it'll pull down the latest version and install it on your artist system.
OK, will that work for things like ARM devices if you're deploying to a target?
If it's a Windows 10 ARM device, it should work as well.
Should be fine. And then last question, any chance that you could make that like an API call to start logging and debugging so you could actually hook it up to a keypress or something?
Funny you should say that. We do actually have programmatic start and stopping.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. There's many features, and we only covered a very small window.
I'm trying to get you guys an extra hour to talk.
Right, that'd be great.
Other questions? Oh, good.
Are you planning to get something similar to what we were having on the Pix for Xbox 360, like a GPU replay with stats from different units, like texture fetch and GPU timings? And if yes, do you have an ETA for that?
So what we have today, unfortunately, we didn't have time to demonstrate it. It'd be great to show you in the booth. We have a frame analysis feature. It's fairly similar to Dr. Pix in Pix for Xbox 360. It basically runs through a number of experiments, things like turning off MSAA or taking large size textures and rendering at half texture size. And it does a huge number of statistics, and then that gives you a lot of data about what you could do to optimize your scene. That feature ships today for Direct 3D11 in all of the Visual Studio versions we talked about. And we'll be enabling that for 12 as well, very likely before we RTM, but certainly in the first update.
And this is available in the update 4 of 2013?
Yep. We will, as I kind of hinted during the closer, we do want to get even deeper. Like that's going to be a moderate level of information. And what Pix for Xbox 360 did really well was had great bottleneck visualization of that hardware. So one of the things that we want to do in the future is work with the other vendors and be able to surface bottleneck visualization that's specific to the particular hardware in a way that's common. And so that's one of our challenges in the next few years, is to get the same kind of functionality that you got from Pix for 360, but available for all of the Windows devices.
And maybe just a quick recommendation, if it's possible to get some documentation, like for helping people that, because the mindset behind Pix for Xbox 360 for GPU timings and stuff like that, it's pretty different from the new approach. So if you have a guideline for transiting, will be.
That's great feedback. We'll go back and start working on that right away.
Nice.
Okay. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your interest. Please come by the booth, and we'd love to talk to you more there. Thanks a lot.